It was a Jekyll and Hyde weekend for the Phoenix Suns as they lost to one Texas team at home and then beat another one on the road. On today's episode of Locked On Suns, I'll break down why both games show us the importance of detail, even in the regular season, for these Phoenix Suns, and why Monty Williams' rotations continue to stand out on a night-to-night basis. Let's go.
You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We are back. This is Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I'm your host, Brendan Kleen, a credentialed media member covering the Suns for the past six seasons, and a writer at Suns.com, where you can read my latest article on the Phoenix Suns defense and Dime Magazine. Thank you all for making Locked On Suns your first listen here on this Monday morning. Hope everybody had a good weekend. Mine was very hectic. No Cardinals game, though, to bring down the mood on a Sunday. So welcome to Monday. Welcome to a new week. If you're finding us for the first time, go ahead and hit subscribe or follow. We're on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, everywhere you watch and listen. We are there, and the best way to support the show is to watch or listen. The best way to do that is to hit subscribe. Make sure the show is in your feed every morning. If you're on YouTube, go ahead and hit the bell down below. Get a notification every Monday through Friday when a new show goes up. And drop a comment down below with your thoughts on the Suns' weekend slate of games. We have the Mavericks tonight. Three Texas games back-to-back, but I'm actually going to go in reverse order. I'm going to go with the Spurs game to start. That is the one that I just watched as I'm here now recording. 133-95, the Suns won this game, and it couldn't have gone better. This was a complete get-right game, and that's why I wanted to start with it. One, I think there's actually a little more to break down. The Rockets loss is just one of those inexplicable ones that just shouldn't happen. We'll really home in on the game plan and the details, aspects of that game in a second. But in this one, it didn't even require much in the way of details. Not to say the Suns didn't execute, because they certainly did, but it got ugly in a hurry. 35-30 at the end of one, but then at the half, 71-41, the Spurs only score 11 points in the second quarter. Their youth just caught up with them. I mean, Devin Vassell early, Keldon Johnson, those guys were scoring. Those guys were getting open. The Suns' defense was a little bit leaky. There was some slippage overall with the team, but they cleaned it up in a hurry. They made it so that they gave themselves a night off by the end of it. But I want to go through a few things because, again, this was a get-right game, and it wasn't just in the scoreboard, all right? First and foremost, I think you want to continue to praise DeAndre Ayton, right? This reminded me of the Pistons game from last weekend where he saw a matchup in front of him that he frankly should have dominated, and he just went ahead and did that, right? I mean, that's all that there really is. Zach Collins was the starting center for the San Antonio Spurs, and he was not big enough, strong enough, anything. He had five fouls tonight. The Spurs were outscored by 6 points when Collins was out there. Gorgui Dieng, a little better, but frankly, the plus-minus for him was even worse. The Spurs were outscored by a whopping 25 points in the 13 minutes that Dieng was out there. Charles Bassey is a young guy. He had a nice box score night, but he's not really much of a threat either. And so what Ayton went ahead and did is like I just said, he dominated. Especially in that second quarter, he was busting out post moves. He had a three-pointer. He was getting to the line. So 25-10 for him on the night. And look, it's not like he needed to get right, but he continued to put his foot on the gas. And the team overall, after a rough loss in Houston, was able to ride his momentum, because this is a game where Booker was good, you know, very efficient in terms of not turning the ball over, but didn't really get to the line a ton, didn't really make a ton of shots overall, less than 50% from the field, only 20 points. So they did need that secondary release valve, because the Spurs, if they were doing anything defensively well, it was sending two people to Devin Booker, whether it was a blitz or a double team or whatever. And so Ayton was quickly the Suns were able to adjust, and Ayton became that guy to catch lobs, to get the ball, to pass it back out to shooters. He had three assists. And so I think he was the biggest driver of the victory tonight, in my opinion. The other way that this game was a get-right game was Dario Saric. So he has been starting these two games because Torrey Craig appeared on the Suns injury report for the first time. Right hamstring, I want to say. I might not be 100% on that. Lower body injury on the right side. And Saric stepped in. And I kind of like this by Monty Williams, because if we've learned anything about Dario, basically ever since he left Philadelphia, he had the one Minnesota season that was pretty bad. Then he's had all this time in Phoenix where it's a rhythm. It's all about rhythm for Dario, okay? At the end of the day, Dario's a guy who, if he's in the rotation night to night, if he knows when his minutes are coming, if he knows what his role is going to be and his matchups are and everything else, he's going to be pretty effective for you. But if he's, you know, wondering night to night, if he's living and dying with every shot attempt, those are not great ways for him. They're not really great for any player, but especially him. And so it was smart of Monty, in my opinion, to put Dario in the starting lineup, because what that is it's a commitment, right? It's, hey, you're going to get at least 20 minutes in these two games. Dario got 21 minutes against the San Antonio Spurs, and against the Rockets, he was in there for 21 exactly as well. So it allows Dario to get into a rhythm, right? I'm going to have at least my minutes at the beginning and end of every half, and I know I'm going to be playing power forward, not center. I know my minutes are mostly going to come with the starters, so I know I'm going to really just need to be a floor spacer, a connector, not make mistakes on defense too much, and try to help out on the boards, etc., right? That's it. And he did that in this Spurs game. So again, a get-right game for him, especially from behind the arc where he was 4 of 5 from deep. His teammates were getting him going. I also thought the Suns had a really pretty straightforward game plan, again, especially once they saw the Spurs sending double teams and everything toward Booker, which was just to run a lot of dribble handoff, not make Booker have to have the ball directly in his hands every single minute of the game. And so Saric was part of that, and it all worked out. 17 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists for him in 21 minutes. Hopefully, even if Craig does come back relatively soon, Saric can at least be ready when called upon in similar types of matchups. I want to hit this just for a second. We're going to do a big Bench Mob Vibe Check deep dive in the last segment after we go through each of the games. But as far as getting it right goes, Josh Okogie was very, very good in this game. And I don't know who I want to give more credit to on that. Obviously, a bunch of it goes to Okogie, but I also feel like you have to give credit to Monty Williams for putting him in the game. Okogie was a forward basically the entire game. Most of his minutes came where he was playing next to Mikal Bridges. He was really the Torrey Craig fill-in, if you think about it that way. He was playing aggressively, trying to get offensive boards. He was driving to the basket and dishing, which is not something Craig always does, but he was just playing with force. He was using his energy to his advantage. And you look up, yeah, he missed his threes. That's almost always going to happen. He was 4 of 8 from 2-point range, though. 11 total rebounds, 5 on the offensive glass. He had 5 assists in this game and 3 steals. So very high level overall addition to this win. He was a big part of winning those bench minutes. And you look at, he played it with the starters quite a bit too, especially when Saric was sitting. And you look at the box score, Okogie was a plus 31 on the night. So big minutes for him as well. Another guy where he's just staying ready and able to make an impact when he's on the floor. And he was able to get a big opportunity, 26 minutes tonight, and follow through with that. On the other hand, the Houston Rockets came, a lot went wrong, especially when it came to executing the little stuff. So I want to talk about how the Suns can't overlook these teams, and detail is important. They were outclassed by a team that's tanking, frankly, when it came to execution. So let's dive into that one next. First, today's show, folks, brought to you by Turo. Turo is the world's largest car sharing marketplace, and with Turo, you can book any car you want, wherever you want it, from a community of local hosts. Browse a huge selection of vehicles for just about any occasion or budget across the United States, UK, Canada, and now Australia. You can book A spacious SUV or minivan for a family road trip. A classic or luxury car for a special event. Maybe an affordable economy car if you're on a budget and just need to get from point A to point B. Or maybe you go big, get a test drive of that new electric vehicle you've had your eye on to see how it fits in your everyday life. Many Two Row hosts can even deliver the car right to you. At Two Row, every trip is backed by liability insurance. Terms and conditions apply, so forget boring rental cars and find your drive at TwoRow.com. If the Suns dominated the Spurs, they were outclassed by the Houston Rockets. It did not go nearly as well. Suns did get out to a hot start. It did feel like at one point that this was going to be one of those games similar to what we saw in San Antonio. But unfortunately, there were a few key aspects of this game that I think you have to point to as failures by the Phoenix Suns. It's not the end of the world. They're still at the top of the Western Conference. I'm not going to sit here and panic about one loss. You know, Eddie Johnson was on the broadcast calling it a trap game, which I get it in terms of you overlook the opponent, but schedule-wise, the Suns had time off before this game. It was the last game of a homestand, but that's not usually a trap game. Usually the first game after a road trip tends to be one that you would look at, so maybe they were just looking ahead to the travel. I'm not too sure. It's only two games of travel after this one. I don't have an excuse, and that's why I come back to the outclassing, the out-executing. And so here's the ways that that happened. First of all, the one that Monty Williams pointed to the most was the offensive glass. And it's not because it was like egregious necessarily. I mean, no one player really did it all that well for Houston. I guess Tari Eason would be the one you point to. Three offensive boards in just 18 minutes. But the Rockets only had 13 total. I think the bigger thing was that the Suns knew going into this game that that's a strength of Houston. They can crash the glass. They can win games that way. They have to win games that way because they miss a lot of shots. They have a lot of chuckers on their team. And they have to find ways to get extra possessions and everything else because their defense isn't very good. So they did that. And that was, overall, the Rockets out-rebounded the Suns 41-37. All of those four difference all came on the offensive glass. I think secondly, you have to point to the free throws. And I know Suns fans are going to look at the totals and be frustrated. I look at Ayton's total, and I think that's one place you would want more if you're a Suns fan. But otherwise, I don't really feel like it was that terrible. If you add five more or so to Ayton, which is about what he's been averaging lately, you get to 24 for the Suns. That's a reasonable number. The Rockets just earned trips to the line, especially the two guys who have the ball in their hands, Kevin Porter Jr. and Jalen Green. And so those guys had 25 of the 43 free throw attempts, and that's fine too, honestly, just like the offensive rebounds. In a vacuum, by themselves, those problems aren't going to beat the Suns, as we can tell by the fact that they had a chance in the last possession to still win the game with a bunch of offensive rebounds. Honestly, that probably makes the offensive rebound discrepancy look even worse. The fact that I think three of them came on the final possession for the Suns. But anyway, when it comes to the free throws, it wouldn't have killed the Suns in and of itself. The problem was the way that the fouls came. A lot of and ones for Jalen Green. There was late in the fourth quarter, there was a foul on a three-pointer on Kevin Porter Jr. by Mikal Bridges. Mikal had five fouls in this game. Ish Wainwright had four. Landry Shamet had four. So nobody was really excessive. Those guys coming off the bench and giving you four fouls is a bad thing. Mikal with five. Other than that, there wasn't really anybody. But it was just the relentlessness of the Rockets and the fact that the Suns were making it easier on them by allowing them to get to the line. Jalen Green was 8 of 24 from the field. Kevin Porter Jr. only took 8 attempts, and they both turned the ball over a combined 11 times. So everything outside of those two guys getting to the line would indicate they had a pretty bad game. But when they get to the line, you make it that much easier. They get an extra 20 points out of that. Imagine if the Suns sent those guys to the line half as much. This game is a double-digit win for the Suns. Probably because of those shots are going to be misses from everything we saw or turnovers. So that's part two. And then I would say part three was points in the paint. And I guess those are kind of one and the same, right? But this is another thing Monty Williams pointed to. The Rockets had 62, so more than half of their points in this game came from the paint. And to me, that's like a NBA 2K level of bad. Like, if you ever play NBA 2K for whatever reason, the computer just parades into the paint. Every shot that the computer takes, the AI takes, is a layup, and it's infuriating. And that's what it kind of feels like tonight, where more than half of their points are in the paint. The Suns only had 40 of their 121 come in the paint. Now, we know the Suns don't attack the paint quite as much, so I'm not really as worried about the 40, but allowing 62 is, it's a problem. Like, you want to look at Jalen Green's shot chart here, and he took 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 threes, but 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Half of his shots came in the paint. He made 5 of those 12. Not great, but when that's a focus for him and he's making 5 of them, he only made paint shots and threes. You know, if he's going to make any shots, those are the ones. And you put pressure on the defense, you turn some of those into fouls. Kevin Porter was the same way. He made both of his shots in the restricted area. Those were 2 of his 3 makes. You know, Eric Gordon is a guy we know is going to drive into the paint. He had 1 shot there and a corner 3. So it's still the Rockets, right? It's still a team that's going to be threes and paint shots as much as they possibly can and free throws. And they're worse at it because they don't have James Harden anymore, but it makes a difference. And it's especially when the Suns, you know, you can afford to lose. If you're in the NBA, you can afford to give up free throws or paint points or threes, right? You can afford to lose the battle in one of those three areas. The Suns won the three-point battle in this game. They were 17 of 37 from deep, which is pretty darn good for them, especially in a game where Chris Paul is not creating those shots for his teammates. But they lost resoundingly the foul game and the points in the paint game. And that was, honestly, to me, the difference. They still only lost by 1, and they had a chance to win it in the last possession because it's the Rockets. They didn't do a lot of other things well. But that's the difference. Details. Winning those elements of the game, not making silly mistakes on fouls, not allowing points in the paint, you know, etc. It's important. You want to stay number 1 in the West. You have this golden opportunity now, a quarter of the way into the season, where you didn't expect to be doing this. It wasn't even a priority. You have all these absences and you still have it. Well, you got to clean up this stuff. You can't have these games, especially at home. All right, we're going to do a deep dive on the Bench Mob Vibe Check, our usual post-game way of looking at the rotation, because I want to really zero in on how well Monty Williams is doing managing this rotation. It's been something Suns fans have asked for years. Is a game-by-game approach to the bench, and Monty's finally doing it. So let's talk about that next. First, today's show brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your favorite sports for the rest of the year and beyond. Your number one source for sports betting info, stats, news, and analysis for every professional and amateur league out there, from football to soccer, and of course basketball. They've got it all at betonline.net. Always the fastest and easiest way to get your betting fix. I've told you Devin Booker's MVP odds and Suns championship odds are lagging a little bit. It doesn't seem like there's a ton of action there yet. If they start to get healthy, they'd make a Crowder trade and they go into the second half of the year at the top of the West, those odds are going to change, folks. They're going to surpass the Warriors eventually here. Devin Booker MVP, Luka is ahead of him, I believe, still. That's going to change if things keep going as they have. Curry, guys like that, Booker should be ahead of them. If anyone gets injured, you want to be on Booker. That's all Suns stuff, but they have World Cup, they have regular season basketball stuff, college basketball stuff, all of it. Head to the website today or use a mobile device to learn more. Bet online, where the game starts. All right, let's do a longer Bench Mob Vibe Check here to close things out. The Suns 1-1 over the weekend. They're going to be playing the Mavericks on Monday night here in just a few hours from when you are listening to this. But Monty's been doing a great job with the rotation. I've highlighted these guys a number of times because I usually like to look at this stuff with you guys after every game. So you've heard me talking about individual players, but a few things that I think are important here, and we should start with the obvious, all right? The center spot. To me, I don't know if Monty figured it out in the Mavericks series last year, if he sort of had a realization, or if it was just, maybe it was when Bismack Biyombo got signed to this team back I believe it was New Year's Eve of 2021, when everybody started getting COVID and the Suns just needed an extra body, and Biyombo was available. He wanted to find the right situation for himself, and he seemed to like what was going on in Phoenix. He made an incredible impact for a few games. There was a Charlotte game, which was like a homecoming for him. There was a Boston game. It was an East Coast road trip, and he played well in most of them. But then he came back, the Suns came back home, JaVale McGee got back, DeAndre Ayton got back, and Biyombo didn't really play from that point on until the playoffs, right? And I was screaming for it, and Monty eventually, basically, McGee wasn't in the rotation by the end of that Mavericks series. P.S., he's not in the Mavericks rotation. McGee is not a difference-making player in a big role, let's say that. And I think Biyombo showed, hey, I'm actually a better option right here, because one, this whole series is switching. And so one, I'm going to be better switching out on Luka or somebody defensively, but also I'm probably a little bit of a better option when the other when the defense is switching, because I'm a little more nimble catching and passing on the short roll and some of that stuff that you need to be able to do when teams are switching on you. Fast forward to now, and Biyombo has been playing the past several games, but today, with, again, the Spurs not really having their best big man lineup in there with Poeltl sitting, Biyombo didn't really make a ton of sense because they didn't really need to protect the rim as much, the Suns, right? Keldon Johnson, Devin Vassell, these aren't players who get to the basket. And so Biyombo didn't play as much. Jock Landale played. He made a three, which I'm sure was a sight for sore eyes for Suns fan. He got to the free throw line. He had four rebounds. He made four of his six shots. Played very, very well. Same thing was true against the Rockets. He came in and he's been playing mostly just in the second half. He didn't score at all in that game. But slowly but surely, starting with the game the other night when Landale came in just that fourth quarter, I believe it was the game before the Kings game, the game after the Pistons game, whatever that one was, he made a big impact in that one. He's been playing in the second half mostly, and now he's finally seemingly overtaken Biyombo. And so it's something Monty's doing that he wouldn't have done in the past. He would not have had that back and forth. He would have wanted to stick with what he trusted. That's why it took him so long to go to Biyombo in the Mavericks series. I'm not saying that was the difference between winning and losing some of those games, but he did wait a little bit longer than most of us would have liked. Him being so committed to Landry Shamet. If you look, yes, he went back to Shamet. I know some of you are disappointed that he didn't keep Dwayne Washington in the rotation, but Damian Lee's playing more than Landry Shamet right now. That's a big deal. Shamet was basically the sixth man all of last year when he was healthy, outside of McGee in some cases. Now Shamet is, you know, getting the second or third most minutes on the bench night to night. That brings us to the other one that I want to hit on, which is Ish Wainwright. Ish Wainwright didn't play a lot in the beginning of the year. He wasn't in the rotation early on, and then he had the passing of his father, which was, it sounds like, pretty sudden, and if you pay attention to his social media, it hit him really hard, and that's not an easy thing to go through, obviously. That's putting it lightly. So he was away from the team for a while, but basically since he got back, he has been a consistent fixture in this rotation, and I think it's really, really going to pay off. Even when Torrey Craig was healthy, Ish was playing at least, you know, 10 or so minutes a night. Now with Ish injured the past two nights, it's been a little bit more. 19 against the Rockets in a close game, 27 in this blowout against the Spurs. He's a guy who does things that, especially with Jay Crowder gone, Cam Johnson doesn't do them, you know? Cam Johnson's not going to come in for an offensive rebound, although Ish could be better in that capacity. He's not going to, you know, Ish can guard certain matchups. He can be physical in switching situations in just ways that, yes, Craig can do it, but Cam Johnson's not going to be able to do. And I think you still haven't even seen the potential if he gets better at rebounding, if he gets his legs under him and he's able to, you know, handle it physically. We saw last year a few times where Ish Wainwright played the five. And so that's in their back pocket as well. I talked about Josh Okogie. He's another example. He'll not play for three games and he comes in and he can make a big impact and just stack the box score, right? So in and of themselves, these aren't huge difference-making types of performances or decisions by Monty. But here's the thing. We still know this Suns bench is a weak spot for them. They've been cobbling it together, but they are somehow getting in this, even in this Rockets game, 11 solid minutes from Biombo. You know, Damian Lee, fairly decent, although he's a minus 17, you know, against the Rockets. With three starters out, basically. Not that they all would start if the Suns were fully healthy, but Cam, Crowder, Paul, and then Craig, who was a starter up until he left the lineup. Four guys who are core rotation pieces, who are, you know, top seven guys in the rotation. And they're still finding ways for their bench to be impactful. So that's, I mean, exhibit A of why this adjustment night to night and creativity by Monty is important. The other reason is it's setting the Suns up to have the comfort with those adjustments once the bench pieces are reinforced, because you're going to have a situation not too far in the future where Cam Johnson is back. Probably by the end of this month, he'll start to get back into the swing of things. Chris Paul, you would expect the same, although Monty has flatly told us that they're lying about what the injury is, so be it. And that we can even set aside a Crowder trade. But you're going to have Payne back on the bench. You're going to have Torrey Craig back on the bench. You're going to have potentially another bench piece when the Crowder trade happens, but we don't know what that'll even look like. But, you know, Payne and Craig are going to soak up a ton of minutes. So it might be the case that I think Damian Lee is solidified. I think those two centers are going to combine for, you know, 15 or 20 minutes a night, depending on, you know, how well Ayton's playing, foul trouble, etc., score. But other than that, you know, Wainwright, Okogie, Shamit, Dwayne Washington, these are guys who may or may not play for games on end. And then it's an injury, it's a matchup, it's a game they really want to win, it's foul trouble, and suddenly these guys are stepping up, you know, making a big impact, winning games. That might not even matter as much in the regular season, but it's building up that confidence and comfort with it so that when the playoffs come, the best teams can do that. Nick Nurse, Ty Lue, Steve Kerr, those guys have had moments in big, high-profile playoff spots where they dust off a player that most fans might have even forgotten was on that team, and all of a sudden, they're winning with that player. That player is making an impact. Greg Popovich, who Monty learned at the hand of, you know, so to speak, that guy is famous for this. And so I think Monty is sort of sharpening his toolbox so that those guys are going to be ready when they're called on in bigger moments than, you know, the Spurs on the road or the Rockets at home. How'd you like that bench mob vibe check? That was a big one. It was all the vibes and all the checks. All right, that'll wrap us up for the week, guys, or the day. Thanks for starting your week with Locked On Suns as your first listen. Now go make Locked On Sports Today your second listen to catch up on the football weekend and much more. That show, 20 minutes or less, available on all podcast platforms, and I will talk to you all tomorrow.